Good morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV KRNW. I'm your host, Jeremy Werner. If you've been listening to KXCV on Thursday nights at 6 this month, you've probably noticed we've had a series on mental health awareness, and that's because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. We began the month with the homeless crisis and mental health, and just last night we had the burden of being. But next week we have incarcerated with mental illness. The following week, schizophrenia, finding hope on a hard road, and to end the month, we have birth and depression, the unspoken conversation. But this morning, we kind of wanted to dive deeper into the next following topics that we'll be having. So joining us now is psychiatric nurse practitioner Ben Raymond with Clarinda Regional Health Center. Ben, thank you for joining us this morning. Next week, we're running a piece on incarcerated with mental illness, and, you know, what is it about, I think people sometimes have a misconception about mental health and people with mental health in prison. Mm-hmm. Is it because they're there, or are they just someone who hasn't had their issues handled in a healthy or beneficial way and the only reaction is imprisonment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that goes into some important history and background. In the 1980s, you know, we had lots of what we used to call institutions, where people with chronic and severe mental illness could go to for long-term rehabilitation and treatment for their illness and provide stability for chronic severe mental illness. Once those started going away, the field really tried to integrate more of a community-oriented approach, which was not certainly a bad idea because it gave patients more autonomy and independence, as many of those institutions did have some safety issues and just ethical concerns, not all of them certainly, but that community approach kind of, unfortunately, as a consequence of that, led to several people falling through the cracks. And since there was really nowhere for these folks to go, a lot of them ended up on homeless and on the street, and about 50% of the homeless population does have a diagnosable severe mental illness. So many times, jails and prisons are where they end up. And I think there's some stigma associated with that, too. It is definitely known that people with mental illness are more likely to be victims of crime than commit crimes themselves. But when you put people in a position of poverty and combine that with a mental illness, people are forced with some really difficult decisions. And many times this leads to incarceration. And if you look at the percentage of people that were incarcerated that had mental illness versus people that were originally institutionalized with mental illness, it's about the same, so it's completely swapped. Right now, I believe it's about 40% of prisoners are diagnosed with a mental illness. So we're trying to expect the justice system to provide these kind of services, and that's kind of a high standard to have, and they're not really fully equipped to provide that adequate mental health care. So then these people just continue to kind of fall through the cracks because there's nowhere else for them to go. And kind of perpetuates this really unhealthy cycle for these mentally ill folks.
You know, there's going to be people who say, you know, we already spend enough money on prisons. Mm-hmm. Why do we need to spend more money on this? What happens to someone with a mental illness who is stuck in jail?
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of depends on the prison, whether it's private or not. People that have mental illness that are in prisons, many of them do have a psychiatrist or a mental health professional to dispense medication if they need it. Of course, these psychiatrists are very much overwhelmed with, they might have one psychiatrist for a whole prison, which is a lot of people. Of course, if 40% of them have a mental illness, that's a lot of patients to spend time with. So they're overworked. Their resources are extremely limited. Oftentimes, they might not be they may be in prison for a while, but if they're in jail, you kind of just get a snippet of their illness and presentation. So you really, it's hard to take advantage of that small amount of time that these mental health professionals are seeing these patients, or prisoners, I guess, and trying to adequately treat a very large problem in a very short amount of time is really problematic. You need long-term follow-up. You know, you need other resources like therapy. And it's kind of an uphill battle for these people. So then they leave and they fall through the cracks again, and they might end up in the emergency room or back in jail, and then you're kind of picking up the pieces and trying to help with medication adherence, and you know, when they leave there, you can't control whether or not someone takes their medication or not. And of course, substance use issues are abound as well, complicating the issue even further.
Okay. You know, shifting topics now, 2 weeks from now, we're going to be having a piece on schizophrenia. And schizophrenia affects about 24 million people worldwide. And people who have this disease say it's very disruptive. It makes a lot of things in life difficult. If you are ever talking to someone who, you know, maybe doesn't know anybody impacted by this or knows anything about it at all, how would you describe schizophrenia to someone like that?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. You know, I would say schizophrenia is probably up there with the most severely impairing mental health disorders. It is probably one of the top leading causes of disability. People with schizophrenia, I guess if you were to boil it down to, what is it essentially? I guess you could say it's characterized by distortions in thinking or cognitive process. So, you know, our thoughts, people that don't have schizophrenia may come to them and we're able to rationalize, okay, this is a silly thought, you know, what this thought is, you can identify what that is. People with schizophrenia really have difficult with the ability to do that. So thinking is somewhat distorted. Their perceptions are distorted for what they see, feel, and hear around them. Emotions may be distorted. Their sense of self and who they feel they are can be disorganized in their speech. And oftentimes this may also involve hearing things that are not there, what we call hallucinations. So auditory hallucinations, visual hallucinations. People with schizophrenia may at times experience something called delusions, which is a fixed false belief, and that is the belief that something may be true with no adequate evidence to support that. It could be as radical as, you know, someone's chasing them or out to get them and they feel paranoid about this, or more on the simple level that they just may be more distrusting of a person because they feel this person's doing something to them, and that kind of perpetuates that disorganized thinking. So imagine trying to work with really not what's going on in your own head. So working is very difficult. Functioning day-to-day life is very difficult. So these patients end up isolated in their homes, and there's not many resources for them. And I think it's up there with one of the most debilitating illnesses one could live with. And, you know, it starts earlier on in life, so it's important this is catched early. You know, if you have sons and daughters that are, you know, 18 to 25, it's something that can be catched then. The severity of the disorder can be somewhat managed with long-term medication and assistance. It is just extremely, extremely debilitating and difficult to see and watch through your own lens and watching that.
So you mentioned looking out for it. What are some of the kind of early warning signs and red flags that people should be noticing?
Yeah, we don't talk about that enough, so I like that you brought that up. The what we call pre-morbid symptoms of schizophrenia don't look like the full disorder, so it's not necessarily going to be, I'm hearing voices. That's not usually how it first happens. Now, leading up to that point, these people that are, you know, younger in age typically, and it kind of differs between gender, but these people might be more socially withdrawn. They may just have thoughts that are kind of odd or maybe eccentric in thinking. Their peer relationships may really struggle. They may start to have great difficulty focusing and paying attention in school or the workplace. They may lose their job. You might want to look out for substance use issues. Many people with schizophrenia, because they don't like the way their mind feels to them, they may try to kind of escape that reality of that feeling, understandably so, of maybe using substances like THC, which only worsens schizophrenia, or alcohol use, or methamphetamine or opioids as a form of escape. So substance use can be somewhat of an indicator of that. But really, I would say a big one is social withdrawal. Because they're afraid of what's going on, they kind of self-isolate a little bit. And, you know, this would be concerning factors, whether it's depression or not, and then schizophrenia, of course, in particular. But in general, those are good risk factors for mental health and overall, but for schizophrenia, those are kind of the common pre-morbid symptoms. And then at some point, either a certain stress factor or something happens, or a gene may be turned on that's associated with schizophrenia. There is a genetic component with this. And then these patients will typically have what we call a psychotic break or a psychotic episode, and that's kind of where the induction of true schizophrenia begins. And then when you get to that point, it's especially important that interventions are implemented immediately.
Okay, switching to the final program we have this month, postpartum depression. Depression, anxiety, and other health issues that kind of come up after pregnancy. There was something I saw. It said 75% of postpartum problems go untreated. So my first question is this more common than we know?
Yeah, it's a hard reporting problem because I think, one, I feel bad for mothers that go through this without any help, because I do think there is this notion that pregnant women and in postpartum will have mood swings, irritability, tearfulness, anxiety, and that's just normal. To a certain extent, you have all these hormone changes that are rapidly falling after childbirth, and then during pregnancy, these hormones again change. So yes, you may see mood swings or changes in emotion or tearfulness, but postpartum depression is very, very different. So I think a lot of these patients may be afraid to say, hey, I don't think this feels like typical mood swings to me. This feels much, much different and more dark and deeper to me. So I think some of these women may be afraid to kind of speak out for fear of feeling like a failure as a mother or a failure as a wife. So there's kind of that stigma component too, probably leading to some of this underreporting. And that's why, tell patients, make sure you talk to your OB as well. They're going to see them pretty frequently. And checking in with them and having a supportive spouse is just tremendously important, feeling that you can talk to this person if something just feels wrong to you. So postpartum depression, it affects about 10 to 20% of women, but it could be much, much higher. I don't think we even fully know, for the reasons that you said, if the majority of these people aren't getting diagnosed. I don't think we can fully say it's whatever percentage I say it is.
And with so many people going untreated, do we know, do we have an idea of what kind of impact not treating this has, not only on the mother, but the child and potentially spouse involved in the process?
Yeah, so I think that's, you're right, it's kind of a two-part question, like you said, between the maternal and, their environment, including their child. During pregnancy, we know that under-treated or untreated depression can certainly lead to preterm birth, low birth rate, preeclampsia. So you have these pregnancy outcome factors that are affected. That's aside from the maternal factor of the psychological impact this depression may having on, their emotional distressed, including sadness, anxiety, lack of interest in life, maybe even suicidal thoughts. And then if that continues to be untreated, when baby is born, there is actually a higher risk of developmental delays with untreated maternal depression. So the neurological development has been affected for this child, behavior issues later in life with hyperactivity, irritability, emotional reactivity, and then even just the emotional development and these children facing challenges in their emotional development, exhibiting maybe signs of depression or anxiety later in life. And much of that may have to do with initial attachment. If the mother is struggling with the bonding process, partially because maybe they're experiencing depression and not getting the help that they need, that bonding part of the newborn phase could certainly be effective, which will have long-lasting effects both on the baby and the mother.
Okay, Ben, those are all the questions I have. Is there anything else you'd like to add about any of these topics or mental illness in general?
I don't think so. I think it's important people know, 988 is the national hotline for suicidal thoughts, or even if you're just struggling, reach out to them. They have counselors. It's a really effective resource. And I would also mention that everyone has mental health. I think when we think of physical health, we think of diet, exercise, taking care of yourself, going for walks. I think when we think of mental health, we just think of mental illness or Prozac or psychotherapy, we're not remembering that, you know, this is something we all have to take care of. We all have to have good relationships with our family and in our children, and it takes work to build those, and it's a daily task of having good mental health. So it exists on the spectrum. It's not just illness. And improving your mental health improves your physical health and vice versa. So they are one and the same. They are all health. I think that's one thing I would like people to take away from.
Once again, that is psychiatric nurse practitioner Ben Raymond with Clarinda Regional Health Center talking about the following pieces that we will be having Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KXCV Karen W. as a part of Mental Health Awareness Month. Next Thursday at 6 p.m., it's Incarcerated with Mental Illness. The following Thursday at 6, it's Schizophrenia, Finding Hope on a Hard Road. And to end the month on Thursday at 6 p.m., we have Birth and Depression, The Unspoken Conversation. I'm Jeremy Werner, and this has been your morning conversation right here on KXCV KRNW.